Pearl Church exists to express a sacred story and to extend a common table that animate life by love. A primary expression of our sacred story is the weekly sermon. If our sermons inspire you to ponder the sacred, to consider the mystery and love of God, and to live bountifully, would you consider supporting our work? You can donate easily and securely at our website, pearlchurch.org, or follow the link in the podcast notes. Thank you for partnering with us in expressing this sacred story.
Well, during this season of Eastertide, which runs from Easter Sunday and then the following six Sundays, our plan together is to explore Paul's letter to the Colossians. The epistle to the Colossians holds out a vision of life in Christ that is simple, hopeful, and above all, good. In our exploration of this text, our aim is to celebrate the simple way of Jesus that bears good and beautiful fruit in our lives. Now, before we dive into this, an aside, Paul the Apostle. Now, I know that for some of us in this room, just thinking about Paul is enough to get our blood pressure to start to rise. Paul, he wrote that terrible thing about women. Paul, he said that about homosexuality. Paul, he wrote this passage that has caused terrible harm throughout the centuries. Paul. Yes, Paul can be frustrating and dense, hard to read, and difficult. But also, in the letters of Paul, we see this brilliant mind that is wrestling with the story of Jesus and making these incredible leaps forward, helping the early church to dismantle its tribalism and to welcome the other, to welcome Gentiles, articulating a God whose every movement toward humanity is grace and love and mercy. For all that can be frustrating about Paul, and there's a lot, his letters are the earliest writings that we have that show the church grappling with the story of Jesus and what it means for our lives. And so they're this helpful pattern for us of how do we grapple with the story of Jesus and what it means for us today. This letter to the Colossians is especially interesting, I think, because Paul never went to Colossae. Paul spent considerable time in nearby Ephesus on the coast of what's now southwest Turkey, but he never went east inland. Later, members of that Ephesian community moved eastward and planted churches in Laodicea and in Colossae. And so in this letter to the Colossians, we get Paul writing to a community he's never met to communicate what he thinks is most important for them to know about the way of Christ. And what we see immediately in this letter is that Paul wants the Colossians to understand the way of Christ is a way of wisdom, a way of wisdom that bears fruit in our lives. So let's dive in. After a standard greeting, Paul begins sharing with the Colossians what he prays for them. And this is something Paul does at the beginning of many of his letters. He starts out with a prayer, and it isn't fluffy filler text. It's not like, you know, I'm praying for your cat, Cindy, and I'm praying for your grandma's cold. This is deep, thoughtful prayers that show us what the heart of Paul is for this community, what his longing is for them. And he writes, "In our prayers for you, we always thank God, the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, for we have heard of your faith in Christ Jesus and of the love that you have for all the saints because of the hope laid up for you in heaven." Faith, hope, and love. You have heard of this hope before in the word of truth, the gospel that has come to you. Now, I want us to notice two things right off the bat. First off, Paul says he is feeling gratitude. He is thankful because of the virtue of this community, their character, faith, hope, love. This is kind of a trio we see all the time in Paul's writings, faith, hope, love. And we can take it as a shorthand for this good, vibrant, vivid way of life, this goodness that's coming out of the community. And then secondly, I want us to notice that Paul indicates that this way of life, this virtue, comes from a certain kind of knowledge. The words in green down there. The words of truth, the gospel. These two things, the words in blue, virtue, and the words in green, knowledge, are things we're going to see all throughout this prayer. Now, in typical Paul fashion, Paul interrupts himself. And if you've read any of Paul's letters, you know Paul just can't get his words out fast enough. And he keeps putting in, there's no punctuation in the letters, so they're all just run-on sentences of Paul just throwing words onto the page, so excited. And he interrupts himself to talk more about this relationship between gospel and virtue. So he says, just as it, the gospel, is bearing fruit and growing in the whole world, so it, the gospel, has been bearing fruit among yourselves from the day you heard it and truly comprehended the grace of God. Then Paul returns to his prayer. For this reason, he says, since the day we heard it, we have not ceased praying for you and asking that you may be filled with the knowledge of God's will and all spiritual wisdom and understanding, so that you may lead lives worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing to him, as you bear fruit in every good work and as you grow in the knowledge of God. May you be made strong with all the strength that comes from his glorious power, and may you be prepared to endure everything with patience, while joyfully giving thanks to the Father who has enabled you to share in the inheritance of the saints in light. Okay, so in this prayer, what we are seeing is Paul longing for the lives of the Christ followers to bear fruit. All of those words in blue, to bear fruit. And he sees this fruit as coming from knowledge and wisdom, the gospel, those words in green. And what I want us to notice is, so we see this connection, bearing fruit, knowledge, and wisdom. What I want us to notice is this very simple point. The way of Christ is meant to be a way of wisdom that leads us into lives of goodness. I'm going to say that again. The way of Christ is meant to be a way of wisdom that leads into goodness. Now, this is a kind of statement that fits in the category of things that shouldn't need to be said, things that should be really obvious. But as we look around American Christianity today, it seems like this one does need to get said, doesn't it? The way of Christ is meant to be a way of wisdom that leads to lives of goodness. The earliest name for Christianity was the way. The way, a practice, a path, a wisdom that leads us into healthy and flourishing and good lives. But for a long time now, Christianity has become more about what you're supposed to believe in order to get into heaven, right? Rather than a way of living that leads us into flourishing. I think many of us here today are questioning that. We're questioning the priority there, and we are wanting to return to following a way. To following the way of Jesus, the wisdom that leads to bearing fruit. Okay, now I want to pause here, and I want to create some space for us to ponder these words and their connection, bearing fruit and wisdom, which Paul calls gospel. And I want to pause here because this can all start to sound like just really churchy language, right? Like really Christian-y words, bear fruit. Lives worthy of the Lord, spiritual wisdom, gospel, right? And I think what I've seen over the years is that as soon as we start deploying churchy languages and sermons, all of your eyes just glaze a little bit over and you all go, that sounds Jesus-y, right? Like, oh, walk in the Spirit. Yeah, I totally know what that means, right? Because it's just Christian-y. It sounds right, so it must be true. But I want to unpack these because I think there's some real deep meaning here for us in our lives. So first, bearing fruit. Now, on the one hand, bearing fruit can start to just sound like, be nice. You know, let's all just be nice. It's like Paul wants us to all be cast members on the Great British Bake Off and just be just so nice to each other. And it turns out that Paul was Paul Hollywood all along. I was talking to someone between the services, and we were like, there's a lot in that metaphor. You know, Paul, like, he's a little scary. His eyes stare into your soul, but then he really just wants to give you a handshake. Like, it's just, there's a lot there. Anyway, So, you know, Paul, be nice. We can hear it that way. But we can also hear bear fruit as shape up, do better, stop screwing up, right? Bear fruit. Be nice or shape up. But that's not what bearing fruit is about. That's not it. Bearing fruit is much more vivid and alluring to that. Because for Paul, bearing fruit is about participating in the recreation of the world. The theologian N.T. Wright points out that as a Pharisee who's steeped deeply in the Hebrew Scriptures, for Paul, this phrase, bearing fruit, is going to carry allusions. Allusions back to the creation narrative in Genesis, where humanity is called to bear fruit and multiply. So for Paul, bearing fruit is creation. Later in Genesis, when creation has gone awry, God sets in motion a new creation by calling a family, calling Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and telling them again to bear fruit, to multiply. They're going to become this family that is blessed to be a blessing. And so again, to Paul's mind, bearing fruit is a new creation. So for Paul, bearing a fruit in the lives of Colossians means their participation in what God is doing to renew the world. And still today, bearing fruit means lives of creative goodness that bring renewal. Back in the late 1970s, farmer and writer Wendell Berry, who we quote a lot around here, was grappling with the damaging effects of industrialization on the ecology, on the soil, on the land. And like today, he was facing this overwhelming indifference of humanity to ecological health, and it just seemed insurmountable. And as part of his work, he wrote this poem, which I want to read you, in part to whet our desire to imagine another way forward. Disharmony recalls us to our work. From heavenly work of light and wind and leaf, we must turn back into the peopled dark of our unraveling century. The grief of waste, the agony of haste and noise. It is a hard thing. It is a hard return from Sabbath rest to life work of the fields, yet we rejoice, returning, less condemned in being blessed by a vision of what human work can make, a harmony between forest and field, the world as it is given for love's sake, the world by love and loving work revealed. I love that line. Being blessed by a vision of what human work can make, a harmony between forest and field. See, what Barry is trying to do here is to rouse our imagination and our desire to begin thinking about the hard work of reimagining our agricultural and our economical practice as a community, as a culture, to imagine new ways forward, to be inspired by a vision of what human creativity can really accomplish, which is harmony between forest, nature, and field, our agricultural practices. That we could actually forge a new harmony. And he wants us to feel that and to be drawn forward by it. And he knows that to see that vision, to do that hard ecological work, we're going to need faith, hope, and love. We're going to need endurance and strength and joy and gratitude to get there. See, this is what bearing fruit means. Bearing fruit means that we become a people who are creative, who are hopeful, and who join our lives to the renewal of the world to work against injustice and disharmony in ways big and small, in our homes, in our relationships, and yes, in our society at large. I mean, just imagine with me for a moment. What are the places in your life or in your community that right now carry disharmony, where there is dispute or disrepair? What would it be like to have the imagination, the hope, the love, to apply yourself creatively, to imagine restoration, a new creation right there? That's what Paul is praying for in the lives of the Colossians. Not that they would be nice or that they would shape up. No, he's praying that their lives would be creative, that they would become people with purpose and hope to make peace, to overcome injustice. This is bearing fruit. And I think that is something that can motivate and draw us forward. Again, this simple idea, the way of Jesus is wisdom, which is meant to lead us into lives that bear fruit. This doesn't have to be big, flashy, or heroic. You know, you don't have to go single-handedly solve climate change. But committing ourselves to this way to learn to be these people. Now, of course, that immediately raises a question, doesn't it, right? How, Paul? How do we become that kind of people? And here's where I think we need to dig into the other term, right? We've talked about bearing fruit. Now, gospel. I think Paul is talking about gospel in a way we might not expect. Remember we said earlier in this chapter of Colossians, Paul is again and again linking bearing fruit to knowledge and wisdom. But have you noticed that Paul hasn't defined what he means by knowledge, wisdom, gospel? Like, what's the knowledge of? What's the wisdom about? Well, he does define it a little later. He interrupts himself again with another hymn in chapters verses 15 through 21, but we're going to jump down to verse 25, where Paul picks back up his train of thought. He writes, "I became the gospel's servant according to God's commission that was given to me for you, to make the word of God fully known, the mystery that has been hidden throughout the ages and generations, but has now been revealed to his saints. To them, God chose to make known how great among the Gentiles are the riches of the glory of this mystery, which is Christ in you all, the hope of glory." Christ in you all, the hope of glory. For Paul, the gospel, this knowledge of God's will, spiritual wisdom, it all boils down to this unexpected mystery, Christ in you all. The you here, normally when we read this passage in English translations, it just says, Christ in you, the hope of glory. But the you is plural here because he's referring to the Colossians, the Gentiles at large. Christ in you, Colossians. Christ is in you, Gentiles, which means Christ is across the boundaries that we have drawn. Because, of course, Paul, as a good Pharisee, would have been taught to see the Gentiles as unclean, as enemies of God, and to expect that the renewal of the world, this creativity, was going to come through the blessing of his own people. But what had been hidden and only now is becoming visible is that God is beyond the boundaries. God is where God is not supposed to be. Now, that idea can definitely spur us to consider the inclusion of others, right? You, other, you who are different than me. I didn't think God could be in you, but here God is, and so now you are included. You are a part of the people. That's absolutely part of the meaning here, and we're going to talk about that reconciling aspect of gospel next week. But today, I want us to consider gospel as wisdom within our own selves. Because here's the thing. In order for our lives to be freed to bear fruit, in order for us to be creative, to share ourselves generously, we need a certain wisdom. And the wisdom that we need is to believe deeply that every part of us already belongs, that every part of us is welcome. When I was a kid, I was in the Christian Service Brigade at my church, which is basically like Boy Scouts with Bible verses, or Awana without girls, sorry. Right? We'd race Pinewood Derby cars. I never won for speed, but I won several times for design. We learned to tie knots, we had campouts, and we would play games together. Now, when I was in the third grade, I think the word is flouncy. I was a budding homosexual. I had no interest in winning the games, but I did like prancing. We would play, you're all like, can I laugh at this? Is it okay? Yes, you can laugh. We would play dodgeball, and I would sing musicals while prancing, right? I would rather you didn't imagine me doing that. Thank you. One night, mid-prance, my dad grabbed me, and he took me outside. And he knelt me down, and he got in my face, and he said, Play the game right. Now, as an adult, I realize he probably mostly just wanted me to learn how to participate in the activity that we were doing, to play the game, to be in with other people and what they were doing. Because I was a loner kid. I was off in my own land. And he wanted me to engage. And I think maybe he also was worried about how the other boys might tease me. But right then, what I heard was that my silly and prancy self was not welcome. And I put that part of me away. And to this day, my silly parts are really not welcome. It's really hard to get them out. Now, I think we've all had experiences like that, right? Parts of us that were shamed, parts of us that we learned to hide, our playfulness, maybe our affection, our anger, our sadness, our need. We have turned against ourselves and we have sent parts of ourselves away. But here's the thing, when we talk about lives bearing fruit, when we talk about being creative, creatively joining in on God's work of renewing creation, well, that kind of creativity, that kind of love, it calls for all of us. Creativity means that we have to be free to show up as we are. I mean, if I'm afraid of being silly, then I will edit myself, right? I'm not going to try things. I will be rigid. I'll hold back from places where I am actually welcome, where I'm needed, my silly and flouncy parts and all. And if we have learned to be afraid of failure or afraid of our anger or ashamed of our vulnerability, then we will edit ourselves. And we won't try things, and we will be rigid, and we will hold back from places where we are needed, just as we are. See, right here is where the mystery of the gospel can speak to us. Christ in you. Christ in all of you. Christ across the boundaries that you have drawn in yourself. Christ where Christ isn't supposed to be. I mean, Christ with your competence, sure. Christ with your happiness and joy, yeah. Christ with your love, okay. But also Christ with your sadness. Christ with your fear. Christ with your vulnerability. Christ with your shame. The parts of us that we want to reject and hide are parts that divine love is absolutely comfortable with, compassionate towards, ready to listen to. Just as with the women at the well, Jesus can sit and talk with the parts of us that we find unacceptable. Just as with the woman dragged before him for judgment, Jesus can say to our shamed parts, I don't condemn you. Just as with the tax collectors and outcasts, Jesus can be right at home with our failures and our muddle. Christ in you, all of you, is good news, is gospel, because it means that divine love is already with every part of you just as you are. And when we're loved like that, well, then we can start letting these parts of ourselves come home. And we can start treating them with generosity and listening to them and caring for them. And that, in the end, is what frees us up for creativity. It's what frees us up to show up as ourselves in our lives, to love and to offer who we are for the good of the world. This is Paul's prayer for the Colossians, that the gospel, the wisdom of God, would bear fruit among them. Christ in you, every part of you, the hope of glory. As we close this morning, I want to invite you, if you'll be willing to go with me, into a brief meditation. This meditation intends to invite a part of ourself which we have sent away, and to imagine that part in conversation with Christ. So maybe consider a part of yourself for a moment that has not been welcome. Maybe it's your playfulness or your anger. Maybe it's part of you that was hurt or mocked. And this morning, as we do this together, you don't have to pick like the most wounded, deeply hurt part of yourself. You could pick like a moderately, mildly uncomfortable that you're just like, I'm just a little uncomfortable with you. We don't have to start, unless you're an Enneagram 4, then just go for the jugular. Just go for the good stuff. That's what I would do. I want to invite you, as you think of that part of yourself, just to take a moment to take a deep breath, settle into your chair. You might close your eyes if you feel comfortable with that. Whatever part of you feels safe to consider this morning, I'd like to invite you to imagine that part in the role of the woman. I'm going to read from John 8 here. Just imagine that part as the woman in the story. The scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman who had been caught in adultery. And making her stand before all of them, they said to Jesus, "Teacher, this woman was caught in the very act of committing adultery. Now in the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. What do you say?" Can you picture this unwelcome part of you surrounded by unkind voices? What do the voices say? Whose voices are they? Maybe parents, past relationships, maybe even other parts of yourself? How do those voices make this part feel? Jesus straightened up and said to them, "Let anyone among you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her." When they heard it, they went away, one by one, beginning with the oldest. In your imagination, I invite you to watch Jesus send each one of these unkind voices away. What is that like? Can you imagine Jesus coming alongside this part of you? How does it feel to see Jesus protecting and caring for this part? Jesus was left alone with the woman standing before him. Jesus said to her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" She said, "No one, sir." And Jesus said, "Neither do I condemn you." Can you picture Jesus saying to this part of you, "I do not condemn you. You are welcome. I am with you." How does this feel? As we close this meditation, can you imagine the expression on Jesus' face as he looks on you, on this part of you, with kindness? Christ with you. With every part of you. This is the mystery, the wisdom of God, which frees us more and more into faith and hope and love, into creativity.
We hope that this sermon inspired you to ponder the sacred, to consider the mystery and love of God, and to live bountifully. If you don't already support our work, will you begin today? You can donate easily and securely at our website, pearlchurch.org, or follow the link in the podcast notes. Thank you for partnering with us in expressing this sacred story.